About a minute shy of 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. This is new music from an Austin band, Spoon, with a song called The Beast and Dragon Adored, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. Okay, we've got repeat. Thanks to, alright, whatever, that's fine. I should have paid more attention. Probably even my fault. Let's go that way. Let's go that for you. Alright, so, of course, this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org, and the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards, is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, I, of course, hasten to add, and it's at the top, even, of an animal show, of the mighty, mighty, mighty anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. We love to get calls. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, it's friendly here. Nobody's going to say anything mean or harsh or whatever. We're just looking for more involvement, more participation. If you're so inclined, and if you sort of are but sort of aren't, meaning that you might want to IM some comments or thoughts or whatever, we can accommodate you there as well. Maybe you don't feel like calling. Maybe you're online and there's another phone line free. Could be 17 other reasons, really. Maybe 18, I don't know. You can IM us, of course, using the fabulous AOL Instant Messenger. At least that's what we're using on this end. Screen name is, perhaps not surprisingly, Talking Animals. And there are other, albeit less immediate ways to be in touch, which include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and by way of our cool website, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing, rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our aforementioned nifty website, talkinganimals.net. Where just about every show we've ever broadcast is archived, certainly through June. And we didn't do a show on July 4th, so we're not that far into July. So what I mean is, for the two-plus years life of the show, every other broadcast is archived. So if you check those out, or if you've joined us before, you know that the heart of the program really is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant or some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Marcia Martin, an ordained minister, artist, sculptor, and more important perhaps for our purposes on Talking Animals, the author of Bandy, The True Tale of a Courageous Cape Cod Canada Goose, a wonderful and distinctive story about the singular relationship that unfolds between Marcia and a Canada goose named Bandy, who through injury loses his right foot, and increasingly engages in ungoose-like behavior in and around the Massachusetts pond where Marcia and her husband live. A story about trust, friendship, faith, not to mention a goose, of course, and much more. So we'll talk about the book, That Goose, the various changes this relationship has wrought when Marcia Martin joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number again to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, maybe you are putting together or help putting together a benefit or a fundraiser for some sort of animal-related group, organization, etc. We'd be happy to help you get the word out on those things. Maybe you have observations generally in the animal world. So, of course, any news, animal news stories you might have spotted that we want to be sure that we bring everybody's attention. All of that and more would be most welcome. You can, of course, again, can call that in, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Or, again, IM, if you want to try to get it to, in today's show, or email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. So, turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, occasionally international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck, get your comments on and discuss. So we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, once again, having said that, having wandered through that preamble, talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, I first have to, our lead item almost has to be the big news from the Talking Animals headquarters, which is that we got married last week. Yeah, so very cool, very exciting, cool tale and a cool location, all which probably isn't necessarily something to get into now. And of course, that's very nice. If you want to get us a gift, that's cool. We're not really registered at Neiman Marcus or anything, but a nice gift, at least for me, and probably for Colleen, would be listen to some of these things we're going to get right into locally about elephants and their mistreatment at the very least, and maybe then you'll write a letter, speak to someone, stage your own form of protest, etc. All right, so let's start with, I went, not really to the fair last week, but I went to the concert that featured X, the Plimsolls, and Marina Key, which, by the way, was a great show, but we'll get into that more on the music show tomorrow. But you have to, of course, to go to the Pacific Amphitheater, where these concerts during the fair are presented, you have to go through the fair. And I'm sure there's at least one or more other entrances, but the entrance that I came through near Fairview, you have to go past the elephant ride. So you're all excited, you're out and about, especially if you're out and about and you have a baby, it's a big deal to be out and about. And then, buzzkill, plunge into depression, elephant rides. And for anybody doesn't know what that is, I mean, it's sadly what it sounds like. Kids line up, and elephants just kind of walk in circles all day, giving these kids a ride, and you get, I think that's $5, you get a picture taken, that's $5. And of course, they try to provide some information in the guise of the educational value of this. And it's just, if you know anything about elephants at all, I mean, they shouldn't be on pavement, they shouldn't be walking like that all day. I mean, everything is wrong with it. And most places, of course, I mean, have eliminated, whether by law or otherwise, this practice moons ago. So, anyway, it's just mind-blowing that it still happens right here in our backyard at the Orange County Fair. So, speaking of that, and the Daily Pilot, which is largely the kind of Newport Beach, Costa Mesa community newspaper, but it's delivered in those areas at least each day with the LA Times, there was a really fantastic letter on this very topic that I'm actually, I might even read all of it because that's how good it is. This is written by a guy named Jim Irwin from Huntington Beach, and a little kind of headline thing within the letters to the editor says, "The elephant-sized problem at the fair," and then Jim Irwin's letter starts. "When I stopped by the Orange County Fair this weekend, I was appalled to see an exhibit offering elephant rides. I was appalled by the condition of the animals and shocked that this exhibit was allowed to exist. Zoos across the United States are doing away with elephant exhibits because the limited size of their facilities denigrates the health of these animals. Elephants are highly intelligent animals who are self-aware, gather to greet their young, and mourn their dead. They have a complex social structure and belong in an environment where they are free to roam with their own kind. There is no educational benefit to treating elephants like Shetland ponies. Despite the claims to the contrary, this exhibit does not educate the public or help protect an endangered species. Instead, this exhibit encourages children and adults to believe that cruelty to animals is acceptable if it is profitable. As a resident of Orange County, I'm ashamed that my county fair would allow this exhibit. Santa Ana and Huntington Beach both have ordinances that prohibit using wild and exotic animals for entertainment. It is time for Costa Mesa and the rest of Orange County to decide to end animal cruelty and enact similar ordinances. Citizens of this community need to speak out and demand the closure of this fair exhibit, Jim Irwin, Huntington Beach. So again, great letter, really knowledgeable, obviously, about elephants and their plight. And I think we talked last week about how the Orange County People for Animals group had worked it out to table at the elephant ride and part of the fair there, at least on the weekends of the fair. And people had, were going to give them free admission, the volunteers who were going to do the tabling and parking, et cetera, and just, you know. And then, of course, 11th hour, everybody changed their mind. So I think these folks still got in on their own accord, and I think there were T-shirts printed up. But anyway, if you can do anything, basically go to the Orange County Fair's website and through there send a letter to the fair about the elephant rides. And then this kind of ties right into other awful things happening to elephants in our backyard shortly. By that I mean, of course, that the Ringling Brothers extravaganza is coming to the Arrowhead Pond, Anaheim, starting on July 27th. I think they're going to be there a good 12 days or thereabouts. So, and we've talked a lot about this, and each year we always have a guest tied to that, and this year will be no exception. On the 25th, we're going to have a woman named Crystal Parks, who is a activist and elephant advocate who lives at least part of the year in Denver. And the last time we had a guest dealing with this a year ago, it was Heather Herman, the 15-year-old woman who got a ordinance or initiative actually on the ballot to outlaw circuses that use animals. Of course, it failed. Ringling Brothers and others made sure of that. But this Crystal Parks woman sort of picked up the gauntlet and just said, well, we can't just let this drop. We there still should not be elephants in circuses, and they certainly shouldn't be allowed to perform in Denver. So she staged a hunger strike the next time Ringling came through Denver for the entire run of the circus. I believe it was 12 days. And she just got back from Africa and studying and investigating more about elephants. And I heard her at this animal rights conference that I was at the weekend before last. So we're going to have her on the show this week from today, July 25th. And on a very related note, there is going to be a protest locally here on opening night of Ringling Brothers. And that's July 27th. It's going to be at the Arrowhead Pond of Anaheim. That's, of course, on Catella. It's, you know, where the Ducks play, et cetera, when there are the Ducks, when there's hockey going on, and concerts, et cetera. So I'm sure you know it's right across from where the Angels play. And posters and leaflets will be provided. And really, it's really important. And as a measure of that, I'm just going to play a quick thing. Usually we don't play recorded announcements during Talking Animals, but this is definitely a time for an exception. So
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
And again, Dick Gregory's point, my point, other people's point is that, it's not necessarily circuses that are the problem. There's plenty of great circuses out there that don't use animals. And those go to it. But circuses like Ringling Brothers and others that do use circuses, again, it's documented. You can see online any number of places. You can read any number of places about the abuse that these elephants go through. And, of course, other, the tigers and other animals that Ringling use. I mean, the way that those animals are trained is they're, abused. And it's all about fear and control and beatings. So, if you think it's natural for elephants to be up on their hind feet in a tutu, I'm probably talking to the wrong person. But at any rate, so we'll talk more about this next Monday in detail, of course, with our guest Crystal Parks. But meanwhile, maybe mark a calendar. I've done this before. I don't know if I can get out there that night. I'm going to certainly try. But at any rate, it's July 27th, opening night of Ringling Brothers at the pond itself. And 6 p.m. is a good time to meet. And again, there will be posters and leaflets provided. And again, a lot of it's a matter of just educating people. A lot of people don't know what elephants and other animals are subjected to in those circus conditions. And once they do know, they're, you know, properly horrified, and then usually, you know, they, in some cases, at least when I've been at the protests, some people have torn up their tickets, gone home. I mean, by that time, usually they're pretty committed, but at least if you can educate them for next time, and of course, if you can get the word out before they buy their tickets, so much the better. So it's an ongoing process, but it's so important. I mean, you know, just watching those elephants, you know, they have these little open house things now, Ringling Brothers does. So when you see these elephants just kind of hanging out, you know, many of them are swaying and doing other behaviors that totally are part of being under great stress and having just behavioral and other health kind of issues that are strictly the product of their circus life and being in train cars and enclosed spaces and not living like elephants are meant to live, a far cry from it. All right, so that's enough of that topic, but, I mean, you know, as you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, elephants are my particular passion, so it just happened to be a weird dovetailing of the elephant rides at the Orange County Fair, and shortly thereafter, all kinds of elephants and others coming to town with Ringling Brothers. So, anyways, do what you can, write a letter, send an email, help with the protest, and be greatly appreciated. All right, so let's see. Here's Hey, you know what? Maybe I'd like to change careers or develop a career in the animal or pet care industry. July 26th, there will be what's touted as the world's first pet care job fair. And you can meet Mike Arms, who we've, of course, had on the show before. He's the director president of the Helen Woodward Animal Center down towards San Diego. But there will be other leaders in the pet care industry, free seminars all day long, 50 or more employers on site. There's both part-time and full-time employment opportunities available. And, you know, the positioning in the pet care industry may surprise you, they say, which includes accounting, sales, marketing, development, fundraising, PR, promotions, purchasing, retail, human resources, maintenance, customer service, education, operations, all levels of management. And, of course, perhaps the more obvious ones, veterinarians, vet techs, adoptions and coordinators and counselors, dog groomers and walkers, kennel techs, trainers, and much more. So this is going to be really cool, a huge sprawling thing, and really well done. Mike Arms, if you heard the show or want to go check out the archive on TalkingAnimals.net, really smart guy. He's been doing this kind of work for a long, long time, and it's been hugely successful in adoptions and spreading those, and therefore, of course, drastically cutting the number of animals really worldwide now that are euthanized. So he's an amazing guy by himself, but this sounds like a really cool event. So you can call 858-756-4117, extension 352 to find out more, or simply just go to petcarejobfair.org. All right, it's time now for our animal news quiz, and going to do something a little different. Usually we... Well, it's not that different, because it's still kind of a true-false question, but it's more specific to some of what we've been talking about in the news. So, and again, it's a gimme. And why should that matter? Well, because there's cool prizes. Which range from Talking Animals gear. If you want a Talking Animals t-shirt, or a Talking Animals sweatshirt, or a Talking Animals coffee mug, we got it. And we got t-shirts from other organizations. We've got books ranging from Meatless Meals for Working People to, again, Shirley MacLaine's book. I always like to mention that one because although she has not been a guest on the show yet, her book, Out on the Leash, is, I think, a perfect prize for Talking Animals games and quizzes because it was co-written by her dog, who I think has a very nice literary style. And we've got CDs, including a cool collection that PETA put out with about 10-12 bands. We've got cat toys, dog collars. We're going to replenish. We're going to broaden out and get some more stuff soon. But at any rate, you could have your choice of those things if you were the first person to call with the correct answer here on the Animal Quiz. And keep in mind for later, towards the end of the show, when we play Name an Animal Tune, the same set of prizes, minus perhaps if someone won one earlier, would be available for your selection if you're the first person with the correct answer then. All right, so come on. We're fine. We're easy. Oh, also, hold on. I knew there was something else for you, and I was sort of stalling for time while I was rummaging through my slightly dusty noggin there. I can also, for the first person to add to the selection of prizes, for the first person who calls in this quiz question, I can offer a pair of tickets to Mark Cohn and Suzanne Vega at the Grove in Anaheim on July 30th. So, I think that's pretty cool. I'm not necessarily a huge Mark Cohn fan, but I have always loved, even though with the twists and turns of her career, Suzanne Vega, and you know, I would go to that if I could. But at any rate, so that's another part of our pile of prizes that you could possibly win. All right, so here's the question. True or false? Forcing elephants to give elephant rides, like what's happening at the Orange County Fair, or to perform in circuses, like what happens or will happen when Ringling Brothers comes to the pond later this month, subjects those elephants to inhumane treatment, if not cruelty. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right. We're going to move on. Forcing elephants, let me just repeat, to give elephant rides, like what's happening at the Orange County Fair, or to perform in the circus, like what's happening or will happen shortly when Ringling Brothers comes to the pond later this month, subjects those elephants to inhumane treatment, if not actual cruelty. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Okay, so this, I think, follows up a story we touched on previously. Animal rights advocates lost the first round of their fight to halt the killing of feral pigs on Santa Cruz Island, but said Thursday they hope to return to the court within the next 30 days to stop the eradication. Federal Central District Judge Dikran Tabrizian Jr. on Monday denied a request for a temporary restraining order against the National Park Service, which maintains the wild pigs threaten. Oh, looks like somebody may have a guess. Let's see. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. In fact, you are not. Okay, which maintains the wild pigs threaten 9 endangered plants and indirectly jeopardize the endangered Santa Cruz Island fox. Tabrizian, however, agreed to an expedited hearing on whether to grant an injunction against the program. Government lawyers estimate up to 95% of the approximately 4,000 pigs on the island could be eliminated by summer's end. National Park Service scientists argue that the foxes, not much bigger than a cat, are targeted by golden eagles that came to the island 15 years ago to feed on generations of pigs. The agency hired a New Zealand-based hunting firm on a 2-year contract to eliminate the swine using snipers and helicopters and tracking dogs. Since early April, about 1,500 pigs have been killed, more than a third of the estimated population. And you know what? I think we're, in fact, behind a little now. If there are ever any news stories or announcements or events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I just want to remind you again about the website, talkinganimals.net. We hope you'll check it out. Not only see all the shows are archived and there's synopses of each show, but I hope you'll also sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. And there's other stuff there too. Photographs and articles, both that we've written and that have been written about us, all kinds of links, audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. We were talking the other day at the house, my lovely bride, about Paul F. Tompkins, an Emmy-nominated, enormously gifted guy. You might know from Mr. Show or his own work on HBO and Comedy Central. Really, really funny guy. And we were sort of talking about this bit, which I also really love. So, this is Paula Tompkins with a piece called Alternative Pets on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
People have their alternative pets on their person. People walk around with animals on their body. See a guy who's got an iguana hanging out up there on his shoulder? See another person with a crazy cockatiel just hanging out? And I guess you're supposed to have some reaction to these people. You know, I guess what they want you to say is something like, well, pardon me, sir. Is that a bird on your shoulder? Well, you must be one fascinating individual. Your personality is not at all manufactured. I say, what if we were to exchange addresses and became pen pals? That way I could collect your letters in a bound volume entitled My Correspondence with the Most Interesting Person Alive. Working hard for you. That's great. You can have any animal that you want, you know, because we have dominion over the beasts of the fields and all, you know, but here's the thing. Even animals need some alone time, okay? How about that, you know? Maybe the lizard would like to sit at home, play on the rock for a while, you know? Maybe the bird would like to play with the bell, look in the mirror for a little bit. Maybe they don't have to come with you on all your jackass errands. How about that? Leave them alone for a minute. Come on, Cecil, we're going down to the bank. Everybody can see your crazy eyes. Woo!
All right, that was Paul F. Tompkins in the Comedy Corner with a piece called Alternative Pets. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you are indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps a subset of sorts, arrived there through our swell website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Marsha Martin, an ordained minister, artist, sculptor, and more important perhaps for our purposes here on Talking Animals, the author of Bandy, the true tale of a courageous Cape Cod Canada goose. A wonderful and distinctive story, really, about the singular relationship that unfolds between Marsha and a Canada goose named Bandy, who, through injury, loses his right foot and increasingly engages in ungoose-like behavior in and around the Massachusetts pond where Marsha and her husband live. So it's really kind of a story about trust, friendship, faith, not to mention a goose, of course, and much more. So we'll talk about the book, that goose, and who knows what else as we welcome Marsha Martin to Talking Animals. Are you there, Marsha?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks so much for making the time to join us this morning.
Thanks very much for having me.
Sure. So, of course, we're here mostly to talk about the extraordinary story of your extraordinary relationship with this extraordinary goose. But even more than usual, I think, on the show here, I think it might be useful and kind of important to develop a bit of context and a backdrop against which this tale began and kind of proceeded to unfold. So, in fact, let's very briefly go way back to the beginning. Where did you grow up, and were animals part of that of your childhood?
Yes, I grew up on the Cape. I'm a native.
Okay.
And I always loved animals. Of course, when I was just a kid, you read the book and you saw that even my earliest dreams that I can remember were about critters.
Right, for
I
sure.
I lived near a pond back then, and I was always at the pond every day, trying to catch snakes like that. It wasn't the most girl-like thing to do, but you know, I even like to scare the boys. Sort of a tomboy.
Right, by waving a snake or some kind of critter in their face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of the reversal, at least at that age, of what normally would happen, I guess. Yeah.
Right. And I always was looking for like the biggest snake that I could catch. You know, it's just like a thrill in my life to catch snakes and other critters. We had like a little wildlife club. My sister was the head of it.
Mm-hmm.
She would assign us points for different things that we could catch, you know, if it was like a really cool catch. One time I caught an eel.
Right, that scored big points, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And were there animals that actually lived In the house with you, or was it more kind of the ones that were in and around your area that kind of were how you spent your time?
The animals in the wild
intrigued me. Yeah, yeah.
And particularly the wildlife around the pond.
Sure. And we're because so far what we haven't heard in that description at this point at least is were birds of interest back then at all or not so much?
Very much so.
Oh, they were. Okay.
When I was a little girl, there was a nest that fell out of a tree in my yard, and it happened to be a robin's nest, and there were four baby robins in the nest. One of them died when the nest fell, and they didn't have feathers yet. They, you know, just little stringy-looking things.
Yeah.
And they were pink. And I gathered them up and put them in the nest and brought it to my mother, and she told me something that I found out recently is not true. She said the mother bird wouldn't want them after I had handled them.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that is so cool. I can bring them up myself. And I didn't really know what was the right way to nourish them or anything like I know now. We didn't have wildlife clinics back then.
Sure.
But I tried my best, and you know, I tried to give them cut up worms. I gave them cereal through an a dropper, and I kept two of them for a while, and I actually banded their legs. And I
would
go in the backyard when I thought they were ready, and there was one that would fly back to me and land on my hand.
Wow, we got
that one baby.
Yeah, we got
some. Fly back to me.
We've got some cool foreshadowing of a later tale in a few ways. Then I
guess. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It made a good beginning for my book because that's really what it's about.
Absolutely. Well, and also let me ask on a slightly different note, but since faith, both you know, really with a small F and a big F, figure you know somewhat prominently into the book.
Yes.
And certainly into your adulthood. I'm curious what kind of role religion or spirituality or faith played in your childhood and adolescent years.
Well, I didn't really come to faith until I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell you the truth, I was kind of a wild girl.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
In the past.
All right.
And I guess because I was brought up in a home with an abusive father, I learned to abuse. I was abusive to my mother. You know, I was a batterer.
Mm.
I was, as I became a teenager, I had a fiance in college, but I had boyfriends in every other town, you know, locally. And I was kind of selfish, you know, as a teenager. I guess it's a teenage trait.
Absolutely.
But in 1971, I did a complete 180. And I came into a relationship with God, and He transformed me into more of an empath, like with a gift of compassion, which I don't take credit for.
Mm.
You know, and I care about the underdog. You know, I was like the black sheep in my family. I was a party animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but now I'm so transformed. I care about hurting people, and it transfers to the animal kingdom too. I mean, I always did love animals, but like this one footed goose just brought out the compassion.
Yeah,
I feel God has worked in my life.
Sure. Well, we'll get into that one footed goose in a moment. But just because of what you're saying now, I'd be willing to know maybe if you could sort of trace the path from the as you call it, the 180 you did at 18 that then led to attending the Faith School of Theology in Maine and some of those things.
Okay, well, it was kind of a complete surprise to me. I was actually attending a church service with my mother, who was a born-again Christian, and she we were listening to a woman who came to speak at the church. She was telling all about this school in Maine. And she said how the people are completely sold out to God. You know, they just want to learn the Bible, and they really worship God. And it sounded very intriguing to me. You know, I was into, previously, like into the Woodstock type scene. You know, I was kind of a hippie. And I was sitting there in church with my boyfriend, who was a drug dealer.
Okay.
And, I hadn't made the break yet, but he and his friends were feeling a bit uncomfortable around me without me saying a word, you know. I would be with them, and they'd take out the pot, you know, and one of them would say, put that away, Marcia doesn't like that, you know, and I really hadn't said anything,
yeah.
You know, they were just feeling uncomfortable, but anyway, I was sitting there in this church service, and the woman telling about the school made it sound very intriguing, and my mother at the end of the service said, during the service, she turned to me, she said, I bet you'd kind of like to go to a school like that, and I didn't hardly mean it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of, I was like, yeah.
Right, sure.
After the service, she went up to the woman. She said, my daughter says she'd kind of like to go to your school. do you have an application? And the woman said, oh, dear, that's wonderful. She said, sit down here, and I'm going to pray for you. And as she started praying for me, I got this sense of unworthiness, you know, and I started crying.
Wow.
And she gave me the application, and I just felt like, you know, all of a sudden, almost like it was what God was calling me to do.
Hmm.
And almost like I was not in control, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I just felt called, like this is what I should do with my life.
And so you did indeed enroll, right?
Yes, I enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
I was accepted, like, almost on the spot after I filled out the application. You know, 4 days later I brought it to where the lady was staying.
Sure.
And she looked it over, and she told me what to bring. It happened to me June 8th, 1971, and the school started early. It started at the end of August. So that was the short time frame that we're talking about.
All of
a sudden, I was there at a school up in Maine. I'm used to Cape Cod. It's a touristy area. I was used to being in the middle of everything, you know, at every party and just where things were happening.
Sure.
And I got dropped off way up. Upstate,
Maine,
where all there were, you know, I was impressed with Christmas trees on the side of the road.
Sure, the occasional moose, hopefully, but
miles and miles of nothing.
Yeah,
and I felt like I got dropped off there to die.
Oh wow! Really.
But God did a work in my life. I wasn't there a couple of days, but the preacher at the pulpit said, "There's someone in here, and you're struggling." With it's almost going to sound like psychic or something,
mm-hmm.
but we believe in something called the gifts of the Holy Spirit in the Bible, where God gives people a word of knowledge or a word of wisdom, or there are gifts of miracles and different things like that. Well, he said, God is showing you there's someone in here, and you're just having such a struggle in your mind, and it's like evil forces are seeking to drive you out of here. And I was sitting there feeling like an alien. I had a lump in my throat. You know, I felt so different from everybody else there.
Sure.
And people raising their arms and praising the Lord. And it just seemed phony to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had an experience with God, but I was coming out of something quite contrary.
Right.
You know,
right.
I still was in contact with my old boyfriend.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that eventually dissolved.
Sure.
But,
wow. Sounds like a really kind of significant moment in the, you know, I mean.
Yeah. He said to me, now you look to the Lord and everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that night some people laid hands on me. We call it laying on of hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they prayed for me and God just did a miracle. It's like he lifted the burden. I was in the same place, but I was a different person.
Sure.
I was no more intimidated and feeling like I just wanted to turn and hightail it out of there.
Yeah, no doubt. Wow. Well, not to, you know, too quickly, but of course we want to get to Bandy momentarily. But what happened upon graduating? I mean, and what brought you from Maine? Then was the plan always that you sort of come to Massachusetts, or that, you know, how?
Well, I was from Massachusetts,
right?
And I went back to my home church,
right,
for a lack of knowing any other direction to take, and
mm-hmm.
I worked with my home church.
Okay.
And I was the assistant pastor.
I see.
You know, eventually, I didn't.
Yeah.
Do that right away.
Sure.
I was teaching Bible.
Okay.
Adult Bible class.
Yeah.
And I did that for 18 years.
Wow.
Took over for the minister. We had a lady minister. And when she would go on vacation for a couple months every year, I took over.
Wow.
And finally she retired
mm-hmm.
to Florida. And different things happened and I didn't go to that church anymore. I go to another church now, but
sure.
I met my husband And we moved into this wonderful place in Brewster. It's 2.7 acres, and it's on a pond, and it's very much like wilderness, even though if you look out the front, you see houses.
Yeah.
From the sides and the back, it's woods, and it's a big open backyard that looks like a golf course or something.
Wow.
On the pond. And when we moved in, we found that there were geese that would come up in the yard.
Yeah.
And this one particular goose and his mate would come up on the deck and look in the windows. I thought it was kind of cute.
Yeah.
He had a band on his ankle, and I was able to use binoculars and read his band number. And I didn't report it right away,
mm-hmm.
but when he came back the following year, I reported his band number to the Maryland Bird Band Service that was
tracking those.
It was on his little band. There was a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
I called it. I found out, I got a certificate in the mail that said he was a boy, a male,
mm-hmm.
and he was, well, now he's 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
So I found out different things about him, you know, that I also found out that he's a non-migrator. But I used to think that he went south every time he left. He would leave at the end of July. It seemed like kind of an early time to leave. But actually, I found out that they molt during the summer.
Right.
They lose their flight feathers, and they can't fly. And as soon as they get their feathers back, they want to take off, you know.
Sure.
But I found out he was only going locally.
Yeah.
Going 2 miles away.
Right.
Well, I mean, I didn't know this for years.
Right, and also, well, actually, first let me just tell our listeners, this is Talking Animals on KUCI. We're speaking with Marsha Martin, author of Bandy, The True Tale of a Courageous Cape Cod Canada Goose. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Marsha, please call us at 949-824-5824, and we're now, of course, talking about the titular Bandy. But, I mean, one of the many things that I found interesting in the book is, I didn't really realize, and I'm not even sure how the distinction is made between geese that do migrate and geese that don't. Is there a specific thing that sort of would indicate that or dictate that, or is it just kind of, you know, some are and some aren't?
Okay. Most geese, in the fall, they fly south
mm-hmm.
to their wintering grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And in the spring, they fly north to their mating grounds. There are four flyways, the Atlantic, the Mississippi, the Central, and the Pacific. And they kind of follow the coast or follow the mountains, that would be the Central, or they follow the Mississippi River. And they aren't totally distinct migratory paths
mm-hmm.
because there are places, like I think it's Panama, where they kind of merge together. But they, of course, they fly south. Now, back before 1935, hunters used to buy baby geese and raise them from goslings,
mm-hmm.
and they would keep them as what are termed live decoys.
Yeah.
It sounds like an oxymoron.
Yeah, it was so fascinating. Yeah, tell us a bit more about that. Yeah.
Okay, what they would do is they would raise them for the express purpose of hunting. They would tether them to a lead weight with like a 6-foot cord with little cuffs around their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedy is that this would lead to injury. But the hunters would keep them tethered to ponds where they could fly back and forth in a limited way. And geese are social animals. So they would see geese flying around on a pond, and they'd come down to join the group, you know.
Yeah.
And hunters would be hiding behind blinds, and they'd shoot them.
Sure.
As they would fly in.
Yeah.
And later it was ruled by the government that the cuff had to be placed around the bird's neck because geese are getting crippled.
Mm.
But sometimes the geese would mate and have offspring, which they would also keep as live decoys. Now, I don't know how many live decoys they felt like they needed, but the government actually limited the number of live decoys a hunter could keep to 25, just like 1933 or so.
Yeah.
And then in 1935, they outlawed the live decoys altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And all these geese were set free. There were thousands that were set free.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a very prevalent practice. But almost seven decades later, generations of geese have not learned from their parents to fly south because their ancestors knew only captivity.
Yeah.
So, you know, their parents didn't teach them.
Sure.
So they stay right where they are, and it's too bad that it's been bred out of them to fly south because
right.
they're in places sometimes where there are harsh winters.
Yeah.
Now, we are known for having mild winters, but the past 2 years, and I think it actually has something to do with global warming and the melting of the ice shelves, you know, Arctic ice shelves and
yeah.
stuff like that. It just has shifted the weather patterns
sure.
so that now we have, and I don't know how long it's going to last, really cold winters.
Yeah.
This past winter and the one before, we had lots of sub-zero temperatures, and we had wind chills
wow.
of 35 degrees below zero. You know, and these poor geese, although they're wearing goose down, which keeps them warm,
right.
they still can get frosted.
Of course. Of
and
course.
They sometimes die of starvation because, of course, the bodies of water freeze and the grass is covered with snow,
yeah.
so they can't get food.
Right.
You know, it's really kind of a tragic situation.
Sure. Well, let me just remind people, too, that or tell people that there's a website that you should be aware of, bandythegoose.com. Just because I'm afraid we're going to run out of time here if we don't get talking more about Bandy and the book. So that's a good way to go. And what would you say is, before we get back into a little bit more about Bandy himself, what would you say, Marcia, is the best way for folks who might be interested in ordering the book to do so?
Well, I would say go to www.bandythegoose.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can order
okay.
it there. It's also
okay.
available at
Amazon.com. Yeah. Okay.
It can be ordered through Borders or...
Yeah.
You know,
all your usual.
Pretty new.
Yeah.
It's just been out for like 3 months, and I've got it spread around on the Cape.
Sure.
I'm working on getting it national.
Sure. Well, now, without giving away too much of the story, because people shouldn't be deprived of reading the story themselves, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully they will order the book, what would you say were like maybe two or three of the most pivotal moments